We're WSA, and we are in the business of designing environments that work. We create workplaces for all sorts of people, and we've always learned a lot by listening. Why? Because architects who listen are people who design, really design, for others, for everyone, and for all of us. This podcast is about what designers hear when they listen carefully to what people want and what people need. Welcome to Workplace Crafted. Hello, and welcome back to Workplace Crafted to continue our journey to explore the future of design in a post-pandemic environment. I'm Tim Hawk, your host, and this podcast is a production of WSA, a multidisciplinary design firm in the Midwest. In today's episode, we hold a roundtable discussion with a team of designers from WSA. We're joined by Aaliyah Springer, a WSA project architect, Tyler Hatton, one of our interior design specialists, and Ben Moody, an architectural design specialist. Our conversation focuses on crafting narratives in design. As designers from different backgrounds and in different stages of their careers, we ask our team how they approach storytelling through design. We discuss how architecture can convey stories and narratives and what the responsibility of the architect is surrounding these narratives. And we ask our team how, as emerging designers, they found their voice in the design process. These kinds of discussions are needed. We know the landscape is changing, and the only way we can keep up is to bring more voices, more perspectives, and more stories to the table. Our hope is that through episodes like this one, you will join our conversations as we continue to explore the design process from different angles, because it's the people behind the design that make our work and our field special. This discussion really is interesting to us as a firm because I think we're evolving in this space. So the firm was founded by basically like two white guys in 1970, right? But one of the things I think is really interesting about the firm, and they were my mentors, is I think when I started as an intern, the firm had seven people. Two of them were women, and this was 1986, two women architects. And also during my internship, we had an African-American architect. And at that time, there were just very few women and African-Americans in architecture. So even though we are founded by two white men, I think the firm has always been interested in diversity of viewpoint and how we can capitalize or provide greater opportunities to diverse voices in order to lift up design. One of the things I'd like to ask, maybe starting with you, Ben, is as an architect or a budding architect, you come from a unique background. How have you found that different backgrounds and different cultural lenses sort of shape design?
Yeah, I came from a small town in Appalachia, Southern Ohio. And I think just living in a city and being a part of like a city was something I was new to when I kind of came to college. And so I think, especially with the project that we've been working on, that I'm a part of, it's like a community center. And so I've been thinking about different kinds of people who will be visiting that space. And like people who aren't necessarily from an urban area, I guess. And then also just like a place that's used by the public and giving back to those people.
So blending the cultures together. So you're working on a community center in New Albany, which is generally known as a pretty affluent Caucasian community in suburban Columbus. So you're thinking about maybe the future and how more diverse representation will probably be using that?
Yeah. I mean, hopefully.
So what does that mean to the design? Like, do you think the design has to be more timeless or less timeless? More specific to its moment or less?
I feel like I'd want to say less specific and more timeless. I mean, another part I was kind of thinking about was, since I do come from a limited background, I also recognize that I need to also learn from those people.
So you're in this stage where you're kind of a formidable budding designer, and you are, what I'm going to say, like sort of soaking it in and trying to find how to bring perspective to those others. So shifting to you, Aaliyah, talk a little bit about how people can find their voice in design, or maybe even you personally, how you have been able to find your voice in design.
Yeah, I think coming off of what Ben was talking about learning from your peers, but also learning about the environments that the project you're working on is going to be in. So I think with that, it's a lot of continual evolution of like your experiences and your knowledge you almost have to be eager to continue to like grow upon what you already know. And I think with that, it's a lot of like in architecture, things are constantly changing. The projects that you're working on are continually different typologies. So you need to be capable of kind of asking your peers for help, even the people who are like more experienced than you, but also not being afraid of like when you don't have that experience that you can't necessarily speak up or voice your opinions in those moments. So it's a lot of back and forth from both, not just wanting to learn from others, but even you being able to give other people the opportunity to kind of voice their opinions and learn from what they're saying.
When do you know when you should lean in? So if it's a back and forth, right? Like there's a moment when you're talking to Tim Hawk and he's very forceful about his opinion. And when do you lean in with me?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something I'm still working on and learning. Sometimes it just comes to whenever I want to make sure that I'm giving time where I'm listening to what you're saying. And then whenever the conversation starts to calm down a little bit, then it starts to feel like those are the moments when I can start to like share my opinion. It's just like normal conversations, right? You need to understand when there's a time to like chime in, but also making sure you're listening to whoever is talking to you.
So one of the things is I feel like I kind of feel like you all need to go for it a little bit, right? Like it can't just be, well, we have to, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's actually how diverse voices can actually influence design, is just to be a little bit more grassroots about it or softer or contributing and pluralistic instead of this culture of dominance.
I mean, when there's a topic that I feel like is important to me or a thing that I have like passion about, I know those are the things that I'm going to be able to like speak up about a little bit more. Because it, again, comes down to like the things that you're most confident in.
Do you think that you represent, like going back to what Ben stated about how his background makes him conscious about trying to represent diverse peoples in the work that we do? Do you think that weighs into what you do?
Yeah. I mean, I'm also from Appalachia, Eastern Ohio. So I grew up with, I didn't know any architects around me when I was in school or whenever I started thinking about I wanted to be an architect. So it's just been a continual process of trying to understand what an architect does and how to talk about these things.
Okay. Let's shift a little bit to, I want to ask you a couple questions, Tyler. So we've talked about this issue of the idea of the other or pluralistic engagement in projects. And we've talked a little bit about the issue of how one might find their voice or provide representation for voices or deal with a really loud voice in the room or whatever, right? So how do you think that those voices in that overall, some of the topics we've discussed actually impact or change the process of design?
I feel like like diverse voices change the process of design when they're actually included in the process of design to begin with. And a lot of times I feel like we don't necessarily have that. We have like a board of decision makers that we hope represents the people we are designing for, but that's not always the case. So I would love to see more. I feel like getting more stakeholders involved and not just the people overseeing all the stakeholders, I guess, to really like understand people's diverse backgrounds and needs to enrich a project.
So I know that we can do that in formalized ways. So for instance, on the project we were talking before, we've done community engagement, et cetera. There's been surveys, there's been engagement. There's a website portal, people can provide information, whatever. But I think you're talking about doing stuff with more intentionality.
I know there's like so many different ways to like engage people and process early on in design.
How do you bring people to the table is my question. Like if we agree that diverse voices are really important, how do we make sure that an African-American perspective is represented as part of the project? Or it could be gender, sexual orientation, age, race, religion, ethnicity. How do we make sure just kind of riff on it. Like how do you think we can make those voices come to the table?
Yeah, I don't think we have to like have boxes to check off of like diversity within a project and make sure that we're checking off boxes for like different opinions that way and perspectives. I think for the project we are designing for, we want to have conversations with these people up front and not just the C-suite, and do kind of more upfront like design research activities with the people we're designing for, whether it's a focus group or a workshop activity, something that's just a little bit more robust as far as information gathering.
Yeah, so I think that's really interesting. How do we as designers take a lead to make sure that these voices are here? I think it's interesting what you're bringing up, the sort of the contrast between decision makers and users. Because the reality is, we could have a very diverse representation even in the C-suite or in the decision-making process, but that doesn't mean that they're going to be thinking about it from an owner's perspective or from the perspective of a patron and not necessarily from a user. So I want to shift back to you, Ben. Do you think that there's potential for us to tell the stories of those people through the space?
Yeah, I think so. One way, I don't exactly know how this could look in projects, but giving some kind of like license, kind of going off what Tyler was saying, like giving more license to the people we're designing for. We've learned about like different ways that that's done. I guess I mostly see it in like residential projects, the work of architects like Tatiana Bilbao or Alejandro Aravena, where they've actually given like parts of the project to be built in and like designed by the people who actually live in it, where there's like a certain parts of it that are fully designed. That's kind of like a really radical way and doesn't necessarily apply to the work that we're doing necessarily.
But it totally could and maybe should, right? In a previous conversation I had with Lauren Miller here at the firm, we talked a little bit about the issue of radical customization. But this is an interesting sort of complement to that discussion where you're talking about the radical customization not coming from the designer's imposition of style or trend, but the radical customization that's coming from the user literally designing. So are there other examples that you might think of like ways that we can bring representation of these people through design?
Yeah, I mean, I think in a way, a lot of the projects we're working on, we're already starting to bring that into play. I know when we're working on like with Plain City Library, we are making sure that we're talking with all of the employees who are part of that. It was kind of these group discussions whenever we were proposing plans, and kind of it's this idea that it's not necessarily the architect who's saying this is what's best for you, but it's that we're also learning from them and the programs that they're going to be having the community work on within these spaces so that we truly understand how it's going to be used and how we can provide the space for them that they need.
So let's sort of keep with that example of like, we've been talking about very community facing projects like community buildings or libraries. How do we elevate that actually to create social impact? Like in terms of providing equivalent access to knowledge to rural, poor, poverty-stricken rural people in the areas around Plain City.
Yeah. I mean, I was even thinking, even though there might not be, we might not be able to get like as high of a budget for a specific building because it's in a certain area or something. Like we were just talking about awards and architectural awards and, oh, this one probably won because it had a higher budget than the other ones. But I think there is something to, I mean, just designing with high design, even if it is like a lower budget project, especially like a public project, because it gives like dignity to the people who are going to be using it. Like if something is designed really well, even if it doesn't have like, you know, all the fanciest materials or, you know, the craziest form or whatever, if it's designed really well and intentionally, I think it can give dignity back to the people who are going to be using that space.
So I want to ask Tyler this. I'm going to put you on the spot because I know you as a designer and you're phenomenally talented. And I also know that you are up on a lot of the trends and really kind of on top of it in terms of having design skill in relationship to what is resonant in relationship to solving our problems. So I'm kind of talking you way up, right? So I kind of see that as a potential juxtaposition in relationship to this idea of like letting people design the space. So what do you think about that tension?
There's definitely times where, you know, I think you have to like agree to let something go just because that's the way you want it or the way you have seen it done and trends, and really just think more about how the users and the people are going to experience the space, what they think of it. I think it ties all back in into like different perspectives coming from different areas, coming from an urban area versus a rural area. Like someone from a rural area, like their idea of a building is going to be completely different than someone who's grown up in a city their whole life. And like the expectations of what they see and how they feel in it, it's completely different. So as much as sometimes as a designer, you have like this philosophy that you want to hold on to, sometimes you have to learn to like where to let that go a little bit. And maybe you can introduce a new idea to a different community, but you're not like imposing it on them. You're thinking about where they come from and then showing them a little bit of where you come from, and vice versa.
Yeah. So kind of closing thoughts, I'm going to ask each of you sort of to build upon what you're just saying. It's like, so given that tension, if you're going to look to the future and address people who are coming in to the design professions, how do you help them gain access to want to live in that uncomfortable space?
I think kind of it depends on the situation, but as designers, we do kind of have a like responsibility, I guess, to just inform people about just options that are out there. It's just kind of like, you know, if I grew up in middle America and I've never met someone from a different background before, like you don't know what you don't know. So I think it's just our responsibility to present options and just possibility to our clients and then let them decide what feels right for them.
And for the emerging professional, you can then help them understand that their voice is strong and can contribute, even if they feel like the community's voice might be more important. Right? Like there is that healthy tension. What do you think, Aaliyah?
I think part of it is designing spaces for kind of collective gathering. These spaces might be kind of flexible so that as things evolve in time, that this space can still continue to like live on. And even I think with that comes down to materials we're selecting, things that are more sustainable, that will be good for the environment in the future and the people around it.
So to your students, because I know you teach at the Knowlton School, if they're interested in this topic of representation, how are you bringing to your design studio the issue of like what Tyler brought up of like your professional obligation to lead and advise and also go with their heart to allow these diverse voices to come in? Do you have any examples of how you're trying to do that?
Yeah. I mean, so right now I'm teaching second year studio, which is pretty early on in the architecture program. So we're just now getting into actually building spaces for public and for the community to come into. So right now our discussions are mostly about accessibility. We want to be able to provide spaces that aren't just all one level and one large expanse of space. But how can we start to break that up and also provide an area so that everybody is able to get to every single part of the space that they're designing? And even from the moment when they enter the building that they're feeling welcomed into the space.
You're teaching them balance, right? Like how do you balance the requirements with your interest to make it, I guess I'd say, cool?
Yeah. I mean, we all have ideas and things that we're interested in, but we're designing these spaces for the public. So we need to make sure we're taking everybody's ideas and interests into account.
So Ben, what's your piece of advice to the future designer architect?
Yeah. I mean, I think seeing as much as you can, I think traveling, I know for me has been a huge part of my kind of education and even knowing what's possible in terms of design. And I think that, yeah, I mean, even going back to the whole tension you're talking about, I think that we as designers probably have more knowledge and more kind of repertoire of things that could work in a situation than just like the average person we're designing for.
It's like we have to work harder, right? Like that's how I see it. Like at the end of the day, you have to take more time to listen. You have to work harder. You have to allow diverse perspectives to percolate into it. I might say you have to be a little bit intentional, like what you were talking about early, Tyler, where you know that the C-suite is somewhat monolithic in their perspective. So you make intentional effort to make sure that the diverse perspectives are there. You've been listening to the WSA podcast series, Workplace Crafted. As we continue our conversations, we should always keep in mind, what's the story we're being told through the design of space, and who is the one telling it? We invite you back for some robust conversations with members of the WSA design team, where you can learn what makes them tick and how they influence design outcomes. Today's podcast was edited by Spencer Hawk, our podcast guru. Many thanks to our team of designers who took the time to join us for this important conversation. And as always, thanks to our WSA clients who allow us to explore these topics through the design work that we do. We'll see you next time on Workplace Crafted, when we'll explore one of the many factors changing the landscape of design, technology.